Hi everyone and welcome to the CFG podcast. Happy New Year. This is the second in our investment focus series of podcasts and this time we are joined by Isabel Fraser and Ian Eslin from Waverton. This podcast will focus on writing an investment policy. It's about 25 minutes and it's really useful for those charities looking to do this for the first time, perhaps going on that investment journey for the first time, or for those looking to revisit their existing policy early in 2020. Ian and Isabel cover everything from policies, ethics, governance, to inclusions and exclusions as well. So loads of really good content. A quick disclaimer is that nothing said in this podcast is prescriptive and we're not providing specific investment or legal advice. Investors should be aware that investing comes with risks and the value of investments can go up as well as down. We hope you enjoy it.
So, all right, so we're here today to talk about setting an investment policy. And we're looking at this very much from the point of view of people who are kind of coming to this from the first time. So I guess the first question then, the place to start, is why have an investment policy in the first place?
Yeah, why indeed? Short answer is it's good governance. If you want a charity, and a charity should be run according to the highest principles of governance, and then setting an investment policy is part of that, and a very important part of that, especially if you have investments, lucky enough to have investments, it's likely to form a very important part of your overall wealth of the charity and the success and future health of the charity. And so a policy statement is vital in terms of the structure of the charity.
And then if you outsource your investment management, a policy is actually a legal requirement. So okay. It becomes not just good governance, but essential.
Okay. And that will be the case for most charities, presumably, that they will be outsourcing their investment management, that they'll be contracting professional investment managers, so they'll need a policy to manage that relationship.
Well, certainly all the charities we come across, for obvious reasons, are in that position. I mean, most charities don't have much in terms of investments at all, in which case, you know, your overall governing structure of the charity might not reflect an investment policy statement at this point. But, things change and charities quite often do find themselves, even for modest amounts of money, and have a policy, get investments and then need an investment policy statement or structure. But even if you don't outsource the management of your money, even if it's just in a bank or a small holding in a fund, which you look after yourself, then it's still good governance to have an investment policy statement.
Okay. Is there a sort of minimum size of kind of investment pot that you would say you should start thinking about this? What's the sort of level you might want to come across as?
I don't think there's a minimum at all. If you're investing, then you would look to have a policy, and especially if you outsource it.
So, all right. So I guess the next question then is, if you've got an investment policy, what's in it? Let's talk about what it is trustees should be thinking about when they're coming to set an investment policy and what they might be using it for.
So determining the right investment policy takes time, and it takes a while to get to grips with the state of your charity's finances, but that's the obvious first thing to do. Obviously all charities are unique, so you want to establish what you want to achieve, know your objectives, so what sort of returns you want to look for from your investment portfolio, the time horizon, so over what period of time, any specific income requirements, and any other goals. There might be some ethical requirements as well that you want to put in there too, which we'll touch on later on this podcast. But the most important thing is to ascertain your risk appetite as well, so how much risk you want to take over time. And then another thing to consider is also if you have any performance benchmarks. So this could be an inflation plus objective. You might also want to look at peer groups.
So an inflation plus objective would be saying that if inflation is 3%, then we want to get inflation plus another 3% would be the kind of goal that we're aiming at in that situation.
Exactly.
Presumably the investment policy then, once the trustees have written the investment policy, that should be the kind of underlying thing that they go back to every time they're trying to take an investment decision and think about what happens next. The investment policy should, to a great extent, guide their thinking about whether they're going to take a particular course. Is that right?
Well, there's two-way flow, the way that I see it. It's the objectives of the charity, and they are the most important, and then the investment policy should reflect the investment of the objectives of the charity, and so one is attached to the other. Now, the investment policy shouldn't be set in stone. It can be changed over time, and indeed it should be changed over time as the charity evolves and itself changes. But if you're changing the investment policy too regularly, then there's probably something wrong with the structure, the balance between the objectives of the charity and the investment policy statement itself. So really the investment policy statement should be there on a long-term basis for a long-term pot of money, and the objectives should be set with that view in mind, irrespective of what I've said about changing it. But if it needs to be changed, then go ahead and change it. Just be wary if you're changing it too often.
So certainly a policy is quite a useful tool for charities with very long-term endowments and time horizons, because trustees will change over time, and as new trustees come onto the board, the policy offers some continuity for the people who are coming in and trying to understand what the charity is all about.
Indeed.
And so hopefully it will avoid mission drift, I guess, is the idea behind that.
Yes, that's true. But it's also important to review and reflect on your policy. There's no specific time frame over which this should be done. But a lot of charities do it on an annual basis. And reviewing the policy is important to ensure that it is still aligned with the charity's objectives. And particularly if you have ethical restrictions included in there too, that those are still aligned with the charity's overall purpose as well.
Okay, all right. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me.
It's also worth noting that it's common for some elements of the policies to be unknown before you approach an investment manager. So you'll have some of the basics in place. At the very least, you should know your time horizon and any income or withdrawal requirements. But it's quite common to speak to a manager to ensure that the policy is achievable, and managers can provide some small amounts of guidance to help iron out other elements of the policy.
We always advise charities just to think about any speed bumps which might be around the corner, known or unknown. Usually use the example of the roof of your house blowing off. You don't expect it to happen, but it might happen. So ensure that you have enough flexibility to be able to deal with those sort of events built into your investment policy.
Yeah, because presumably you don't want it to be entirely prescriptive. You don't want to set down a straitjacket for trustees. You're offering a guidance for the future so that you have some idea of where you might want to go. Okay, so presumably there's a number of legal kind of guidelines talking you through exactly how you should do it. Presumably the place to start is with the Charity Commission guidance, CC14, is that right?
Absolutely. It's a must read, the CC14. If any trustee's not read it, then they must and should read it. And within that policy, if you read through it, it has some very clear guidelines of what should be in the policy.
Yes, so in addition to the things we've talked about, CC14 states that an investment policy should address four issues in particular. To quote them, they're the creation of sufficient financial returns to enable the charity to carry out its purposes, the maintenance and, if possible, enhancement of the value of the invested funds, the management of risk, and lastly, the charity's stance on ethical investment, if any,
right,
which we've talked through. So C14 lays out what a charity's investment policy also will usually include, which is the scope of its investment powers, investment objectives, attitude to risks, how much is available for investment, timing of returns, and liquidity needs, and then also the types of investments that the charity wants to make. So that could include ethical considerations, which we'll touch on later. Also, who can take investment decisions? So is that trustees, an executive, an investment advisor or a manager? How the investments will be managed? So is that discretionary or not? Which follows on nicely from the point that we just mentioned. Benchmarks and targets set by which performance will be judged. And also reporting requirements for investment managers. So how often will they report to your investment committee? It could be on a quarterly basis, it could be on a biannual basis. You might also have some written reports as well. Those are really helpful, those sorts of guidelines, and really sort of iron out who can make decisions and how the committee is updated as well by the manager.
Okay. So presumably different sort of scales of charity will want to invest a different amount of resource and kind of depth in their investment policy. How would you say it changes depending on the amount of resource that you're kind of approaching?
I mean, clearly, if you've got a very complicated financial situation, then the investment policy statement needs to address that and make sure that all the bases are covered, really. But for most charities, especially if you're starting out and writing your policy for the first time, we would advise keep it simple at first, and you can build on it over time. Keep it simple, especially when you're getting it first agreed, and then talk to your investment manager if you have one, or if you're about to appoint one, then enter an engagement with them, and they may be able to help by providing some steer, some pointers as to how it might be enhanced. Because at the end of the day, the policy statement makes sure that what the trustees mean and what the investment committee of the charity means, if there is one, and what the managers mean, are all aligned, and everybody's talking about the same thing at the same time. So it's worthwhile building this conversation over time.
Lovely. Okay, and we've talked a little bit about ethical investments and that's how ethical investment fits into the policy. Do you want to talk a bit more about a charity that has ethical concerns should go about kind of incorporating those into the policy?
Yes, so developing an ethical investment policy can help align your charity's philosophical endeavours with its investments. But something that's really important is to avoid leaning on personal opinion. As a trustee, it can be easy to let personal ethics take over. But what you need to ensure is that the focus is on the charity's overall purpose and that the ethical investment policy is aligned with that charity's objectives and not any personal opinions, as I said. So you need to focus on what's legal and profitable but beneficial for the charity and it's over the long term for its reputation. Mm-hmm. Again, CC14 can be quite a helpful place to refer to here. It states that trustees can decide to invest ethically for the following reasons. So that's a particular investment conflicts with the aims of the charity, or the charity might lose supporters or beneficiaries if it does not invest ethically. Or lastly, there's no significant financial detriment. So it's key to look into those three different reasons.
The trustees can get themselves into horrible knots when it comes to ethical policies and incorporating an ethical policy into an investment policy. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, it needs to, Isabel's absolutely right, it needs to reflect the charity's aims and ambitions and their ethos. But it also needs to be practical. You need mm-hmm. to be able to fulfil the restrictions as far as investments go. And we would very much encourage charities to engage with their portfolio managers, with their fund managers, to ensure that the policy can be implemented in an effective and practical manner.
Yeah, so this is a situation where, for example, if you're saying, oh, we don't want to invest in tobacco, tobacco suppliers is an obvious one, but then... Mm. You can find yourself with people who are transporting tobacco or Tesco sell tobacco products and so on and so forth, and you can find yourself excluding large chunks of the stock market. Is that the kind of issue that we kind of come up with?
That's the kind of issue, but you being wonderfully precise as compared to some of the policies we've seen come our way. We see things like as broad as, no, we don't want to invest in any company which damages society. And how do you define what damages society? Who's going to make that qualitative decision, and how's it implemented? So they really need to be much narrower than that, and much more precise and focused than those broad, sweeping, general statements.
Okay, so the clear thing with an ethical policy is to, well, as you said, to have something that's implementable. Where do you start to worry when somebody comes to you with an ethical policy about how implementable it is? If you find them excluding a significant chunk of the stock market, presumably you're saying, no, I think you may need to go back and think about this again.
So we do. So yes, so we can make a broad-based assessment as to how much of the stock market might be investable or how much is excluded by any given policy. And if a charity has very defined goals and objectives which make that inevitable, then all we can do is point out the obvious as to how much they are limiting the investment universe. And you know, be careful about what you're allowed to do according to CC14, but if the charity is confident that they are allowed to do it, that it is within the restrictions which CC14 provides, and they are willing to accept the possible financial consequences of the restrictions they are imposing, then you should be able to find a manager who does it, who's willing to do that. Not all managers will be willing to do it. Not all managers are capable of implementing very strict rules, but there will be a manager somewhere who will be able to do it, who might be able to do it. And in that case, go right ahead. But the more restrictions there are, the more complex the policy is, the more difficult it is to achieve financial returns is quite often the result.
And presumably that must be a situation that comes up quite a lot, as you have a kind of idealised investment policy and then you look at the costs involved in actually implementing that, and that's a situation at which you kind of discover you have to cut your coat to suit your cloth a little bit.
Yeah, and it's difficult because this is all looking at future returns and the outcome in the future, so nobody can actually tell you what the result is going to be. All we can tell you is what the result might have been in the past and what the implications might be in the future. So I'm afraid it is very much an art rather than a science when it comes to that.
Yes. Presumably you are in a position to say to people, I'm sorry, but there's a number of pooled funds out there and you're not going to fit into any of them because you're not going to, they definitely are not going to achieve what it is that you want. And at that point people might engage in a bit of head scratching and go back and think again about, is this actually really what we want to do?
That's true. Yeah, but there's also the option to go segregated, so you have a very bespoke portfolio that's tailored to your needs and requirements. A lot of fund managers, or some fund managers, offer both pooled and segregated. And then there are a number of ethical funds out there. And the fund that we recently launched screens out arms, adult entertainment, tobacco and gambling against specific thresholds.
I see, so this is a charity authorised investment fund. This is a new vehicle that was introduced quite recently, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
So there's relatively few of those, as I understand it, on the market. Yeah, this is still a whizzy new product.
Well, there are a limited number of charity specific funds out there, of course, but there are ethical funds out there that aren't necessarily charity specific. So there's those two options. For charities looking to invest in pooled solutions with an ethical investment policy.
Yeah, okay, so getting into a pooled fund, as I understand it, is there are definite advantages to that, not the least of which is that segregated can be more expensive. Would it be useful, do you think, to talk about an example from the sector?
We work with a lot of different charities with ethical investment policies in place. Actually, a third of our charity clients have ethical policies of some sort. So it's something that we're very used to seeing, and it's obviously quite common in the charity sector for these organisations to have ethical policies. Outside of our organisation, there are examples that have been in the press of charities that have either not had an ethical investment policy in place and then been found out to have investments in companies that perhaps contradict their overall objective as a charity. And while that's legally okay, it can be frowned upon. So it's a difficult one.
So you're very much talking about reputational risk, and reputational risk can really damage a charity. So even in some cases where charities have gotten in the press and been vilified for their investments because they got investments which perhaps the public wasn't expecting or didn't agree with, even in those cases they're not breaching their internal policies. It's just that their policies were quite soft around an ethical investment. But there are also others where a charity has had a policy and there's been a breach of their policy, and that also sometimes finds its way into the press, especially for high profile charities. Most charities are not in this situation, but it is worthwhile noting that any charity which has reputational damage can really affect its well-being and its financial well-being over time.
Yeah, and I think also presumably the problem is that if you are trying to make the world better in some way and you find yourself investing in people who are actually working against you, then it's not much use having the 4% of your portfolio that you give away in grants doing good over here, whilst the 96% that you're investing in are doing something wrong over here. So it's certainly worth having a think about, I would imagine.
The very well flagged one from 2003 was the Panorama investigation into Comic Relief, and Comic Relief was suffered from reputational risk as a result of that that expose, in that case they didn't have a very robust policy, and indeed the mission statement of the charity seemed to be at odds with the underlying investments. Mm-hmm. So there you could probably say that whereas the investments didn't breach any policies which Comic Relief had, perhaps their policies weren't robust enough considering the objectives of the organisation.
Mm-hmm. And it's especially true for someone like Comic Relief, who are very much in the public eye and relying on public goodwill. If you're perhaps a little less well known, you may be able to get away with it a little bit more, but you still want to think about whether you're actually achieving the goals that you're aiming for. I guess from my point of view, the interesting thing with an investment policy is getting the trustees all on the same page with what it is that they're actually trying to achieve. It's a useful opportunity maybe to get them to sit down around the table and say, what is it you actually want?
And that's really important, because everybody's got their own opinion, and certainly you need to try and divorce your opinion from the charity and ensure, if you're a charity trustee or the investment committee of a charity, that you're representing the charity, not your own opinions. Nevertheless, individuals can have their own opinion about the charity's objective, and so it is important to get people around the table and come up with a consensus. Now, of course, the bigger the committee, the more people there are, the more difficult it's going to be, and so it needs to be, in my opinion, a defined and probably a smaller group to determine the policy and come up with a structure agreed amongst that smaller group. And if that smaller group can come to an agreement and has a sensible policy which reflects the charity's objectives closely, then inevitably the rest of the trustee group or the rest of a wider committee board will follow that lead. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of a useful way just to get some impetus behind it and get it moving and get something down on paper.
And you absolutely want the charity singing from the same hymn sheet, at least to a certain extent, before they go out and start talking to external people to execute their mandate. Mm. Because if you can't communicate your mandate to your investment manager, then you probably won't get the investment management that you want.
It is worthwhile putting it to an investment manager or an advisor for that matter, mm-hmm. just for reflection, because often things are missed or things are unclear, or you think things are clear to you and you understand the language quite clearly, but when outside parties read it and try and understand it and then try and act on it, it sort of holes do appear and misunderstandings appear. So especially when writing a policy for the first time, it is worthwhile sort of bouncing it off an advisor or an investment manager, if you like, just to see what they think and see if really it can be applied as you wish and as you think it should be.
Mm. So finding out that it's achievable and workable by an investment management can be beneficial, but it's also important to note that preparing the stock policy can't be delegated to the investment manager in mm-hmm. its entirety.
Yeah, because it very much for the people making the investments, it's important that they understand their own risk appetite and how much risk they want to take. And I guess the other thing that's absolutely vital to have really clear is your time horizon, isn't it? Mm. And how much you're... Because if you don't understand the volatility that you're prepared to accept in your portfolio and the risk that you're willing to take and your requirement for income in each given year, then your policy, until you've really bottomed that out as a group of individuals, it's going to be very hard to come up with a coherent policy.
And it is really worthwhile spending some time about thinking about your risks for your charity. Mm-hmm. And volatility of markets, we know, is a risk, is one of the risks. Mm-hmm. But to us, that is just one of a multiple number of risks. And quite often, it might not be the most serious risk which a charity faces when it comes to investments. And that should be put in context of the actual charity. So things like liquidity risk, for example, can you realise the money if you need it or when you need it? And risks inherent to your charity. Is there a large project or a campaign coming up which might need funding? or something which you know you don't think might happen, but it will need some cash if it does happen. No, those sort of risks, which an investment manager might not even know about, we would argue should be taken into account when building up your policy. That's not to belittle volatility, but if you are a long-term investor and you have a long-term time horizon, we would argue that volatility is probably one of the lesser risks which should be emphasized within a policy.
So, and I guess the end objective for the policy, when once you've gone through this whole process and developed it, is that you as a trustee group are extremely clear about what it is that you're trying to achieve, and that you've documented that, and that you can then communicate that. Would that be the kind of sign of a successful investment policy there?
Yeah, documentation and communication is you know a key part of it. Really, what you want to do is you know, once you've moved on from the charity, that somebody else can come back and see the decision making process as you went through it and understand how that decision was it came about. And also, you know, we hope it never happens, but if something goes wrong, and then it needs to be very clear about how those decisions were made. And what information was used and what the conclusion was, because things do go wrong sometimes, you know, we hope there's never any lawyers involved, but if they are involved, then they need to have complete clarity as to how decisions would come about.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. That was very interesting indeed.
Great. So big thanks to Ian and Isabel for that. If you're keen to download Waverton's guide on first-time investing, you can visit their website at waverton.co.uk/charities. If you'd like to speak further on any of the topics covered, then please feel free to contact Isabel on 020-7484-7485. Thanks to Isabel for offering that out. That's really, really kind. So yeah, again, massive thanks to Waverton for taking the time to speak with us. And thanks to David for asking the questions. We hope you enjoyed it. Cheers.